We're live.
All right, welcome everybody to Schaefer Baseball Report Wednesday edition. Everybody back in the house again.
Two weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row. It's kind of tough.
Is this a record? No,
we've locked in here for a period of time at times. We've had so many different other people come in here. John Ennis, Keith Glauber,
of course,
Ray Torres. I don't know who else have we had in here, Andrew. We've had Tommy Viola.
You've had Dusty Watson.
We've had Dusty. I mean, if we go down a list of the people that we've had on the show, and Tommy and I started to do this almost 8 years ago with WFNZ. And Alan Cockrell was my first guest. And I had to do it myself. They called me and asked me.
He's been in here.
Want to do it? And I'm like, oh, man, it'd be fun. But I was nervous.
Yeah,
but
you got to get comfortable. I mean, it's, obviously, it's a podcast, but we are live. So you just don't want to say anything stupid.
And it was good. I mean, Alan and I were teammates in AAA.
Nice.
And, we had a little bit of history together. We had some funny stories and things that we could just throw out there, and it rolled pretty good. And then, you get the bug. It's fun. But you know what? We get to talk to baseball people all the time, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Realistically, we could be up. The three of us could be here and do a full show and talk enough baseball. Yeah. But, having, Chris Burke on, having Coach Hood on, having, Coach Hare on, Coach Gilmore, it's different, right? Because a good perspective.
We brought some of the better coaches in the state of South Carolina, North Carolina area. Yeah. You talk about Backage.
MLB, ex-MLB guys.
So it'll keep going. I mean, there's plenty of good people out there to bring in and giving good information all the time, the big piece of what we do, obviously, is we want people to understand what the program is and what the head coach is like. And it's a big part of any recruiting process that some families don't go through and understand where they're going and who they're going with.
Sure.
Because, with 100%. It's crazy with the portal and stuff like that now, which we're not big fans of, but,
right.
You want your kid to be with somebody that's quality for, that period of time.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're hitting our target, right? Our target, our listeners are probably a lot of parents who have high school baseball players, college, we're hitting that, voice. So if we get, Coach Hood on who can speak to that and help us, not just, we just don't need Power Five coaches on here. We need to cover the whole spectrum. And so that perspective is always important.
I was thinking about when I was writing the questions last night and today, you're talking about Power Fives, right? I mean, there are so many mid-majors that are climbing into that conversation that, they're Power Five just because of the conference.
Correct.
But if you were going to sweep up everybody, There's a lot of mid-majors that would fall into that category.
Absolutely.
In terms of, making it the collegiate big leagues, right? Because that's what it's going to be. Yeah. Because, everything else is going to turn into the minor leagues. We've had this conversation
100%.
So many times. And unless they clean this portal stuff up, they're just going to – people are going to send. And the NIL.
Right.
And the NIL money.
Right.
I mean, that's, it's not fair. Do you remember, years ago – and I can't even tell you how long ago, but – the teams down in the South practice. They were allowed to practice whenever they were permitted, right? And all the teams up north couldn't keep up with them,
right?
So that's where that whole, the lower half of the U.S. and up into California and stuff like that. That's where the best teams in the country were because everybody was going down there. So now you have to, you got to make changes because now it's becoming the big dogs get the NIL money,
right?
And in a lot of other schools, the NIL money's out there, but the kids have to go and hustle it to get it. And it's a slippery road, man, because the kids can get the programs in trouble.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you look at it too, and I completely agree with you. I mean, I think the regionalization of when I was playing at Winthrop, 20 years ago, we were starting the first week of February where Northern schools weren't starting until 3 weeks later. It was such an advantage. But going back to your point with the mid-majors, you're absolutely right. I mean, listen, who wants to play Coastal? Who wants to play UNC Wilmington? Who wants to play Dallas Baptist?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of
ECU
Power Fives ECU, right? I mean, who wants to play those teams in the regionals and super regionals? That's great.
And this is something that, we'll bring up with Randy when it comes on, but it's, essentially RPI plays a really big piece into how these guys have to schedule.
Yeah.
And then, so you go ahead and you schedule into like UNCW does, a Wake Forest, a Coastal, an NC State, a North Carolina. So, you're taking your guys, and you're going to go compete at a higher level or 100%. Just sometimes a higher level midweek, if you're doing it right. Or if you're doing it, that's the way you choose to do it. Then playing some of the teams in your conference.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Since you play those schools, you're preparing yourself for that conference tournament. Look at Coach Mack at USC Upstate playing Clemson three times, Kentucky three times, South Carolina. I mean, that prepares you to as you get into conference play, more so in the tournament, and carry you through.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's a plus and minus to it.
Though, well, right? Of course,
you're gonna get you're gonna get smacked around, and you're not gonna. You're trying to look for that automatic bid without having to win your conference, without having to win the championship, whatever. Like, okay, you are in the top, the top 25, the top 40. Well, how many teams did they take in the first year of the regional?
64.
So you got to fall into that 64, and it's not always winning the your tournament or your
The RPI now, you got to be top 40 now. I mean, at the end of the day, to be able to get that at large bid.
To know going into your conference like that.
To know,
like,
okay, right, I'm, correct.
I'm, we may end up, in Iowa, but, we're going. We're going, man.
That's it.
So I'm excited about that. Yeah. Andrew, you went up to the Bluefield State?
Yeah.
Oh,
Bluefield State Baseball Golf Tournament. Yeah. And I didn't bring any our hardware, but we got first place.
We always win.
Oh, well. Well, Andrew's a ringer.
Andrew's a golfer, man. Andrew crushes the ball when he's on. It's the best scramble guy you can play with, because he'll hit the shoot this low line drive about 360
runners.
It's crazy, man.
Hopefully it's not.
And then everybody goes in and tries to flip at it. Everybody flips at it, and then I shank two to the right.
We got mulligans. Well, we got mulligans.
It's always good when your leadoff hitter hits it right down the middle, 300. That's special.
It's not even fun. I mean, like, can we tee off? I just tee off just to, because my ball has a parachute on the back of it.
It does. Just like your BP.
Just like my career, man.
That wind's
not blowing straight out. No chance.
It's a special day when the wind blows out.
And speaking of golf, UDACF golf tournament sold out. Ready to rock on that one?
We did that quick. Yeah. We did that quick. So, You Deserve a Chance Foundation is our nonprofit where we started that off. We're going on 12 years now, 11 years, almost as long as we do in USA Baseball.
The golf tournament's eight.
Golf
this
tournament's
is the eight.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's turned into Andrew's dad's memorial tournament.
Of course,
which is cool.
Yeah.
The Pirate.
Got some cool flags this year for it.
I know.
Those are
about that.
Sweet.
Did you see those?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
I didn't.
Andrew designed these flags that are going on every sticker. It's the Pirate flag, and it's got Lou's name on it.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, that's great.
He's got one extra for me.
Oh, those are great.
Isn't that cool?
Those are great.
So
that's cool.
And then we're going to go down Monday to play in the FCA golf tournament down in Wilmington.
Oh, good.
I think it's called Portis Neck or something like that. I don't know about the
Nice.
But it's funny. I was telling you about David Lee before that, right? And he's a trip. He really is. He's a good guy. He's just got to, like, my man, David. Because he's listening. I know he's listening. But, Andrew had to talk to him yesterday because I let him use our stalker gun.
Yeah.
It wasn't working. He's like, I got it, whatever. And then so he had to call Andrew. And then, Andrew mentioned something about the golf tournament. And Dave's like, you didn't invite me?
Yeah,
like,
I can't play with your team.
Like, dude, I hit golf balls at Beau Rivage with you at the driving range. You suck. You're not playing with us, man. You're not a chance. That ain't happening.
That's you can't have a rigger four spots. I mean,
at our You Deserve a Chance Foundation, our nonprofit golf tournament, Andrew and I always play together. Like, we won three times at Fort Mill High School tournament, the athletic boat. I mean, I'm losing my train of thought here, but I have to play with his at the UDACF golf tournament. I got to play with his stepdad.
Yeah.
And then I got two other friends that are just good golfers.
Yeah.
And it's painful.
You guys just have,
I get it.
It's painful for it. Cause when I'm a C player on my best day.
Yeah.
And probably a D player. And I get a text like, can't wait to watch you carry us.
That's scary. That's like me.
Carry what? You bagged it.
Yeah.
That's not happening. Yeah.
Well, I have my foursome and, I have two good players and then I have a ringer. I have a big time ringer. I'm excited this year.
And it goes even better. I mean, you're playing with baseball people, right?
Yeah.
Which we love. And it is clubhouse banter. It is. You better have thick skin out there, and enjoy it. But I mean, the one year I had, I played with Globber and Eddie Buskey that built our fields, redid Wrigley and Fenway, and then rebuilt Seattle. And Eddie's just, he'll have his red solo cup and his freaking throat rocket hanging off his lip, and he'll shoot. lights out.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. It's,
and you know, Keith will. Keith's playing. He's playing 7 days a week now.
Oh yeah,
he's at Fort Mill.
Well, he's going to run out of time because he's got to go back up to New Jersey and run. He's got to work, so he's going to get it all in. But every time you talk to him, yeah, man, I'm working on this hinge. I'm we went to Ireland with him.
Yeah, that's right.
It kind of sucked because he couldn't stay. When we got there, kind of a sad story. But we got off the plane and we were heading to Shannon, and the phone rings and it's Caden, and he says, his mom's dad.
Yeah, that's right.
So he had to turn around the next day. He played that one day, and then he had to turn around and go back. So
that's terrible.
It was hard. But he loves it, man.
He's a competitor too. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's no like, you know, you can have a little joke, you know, he'll give you that little like, you know. But, you know.
Well, it's funny when you watch Caden on the mound. Yeah. Where do you think he gets that?
Oh, he's got that.
Zoned in.
He gets it from his old man. Yeah, for sure.
Now, Caden got beat by Fort Mill the other night.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It was 11 strikeouts.
Not a lot of hits.
No earned runs.
Not a lot of hits that game.
Yeah, I mean, Caden's not getting him much. But no, listen. Fort Mill is a very good team.
No, I know.
Very good team.
Craddock's back.
Yep.
He just pitched last night, didn't he?
Threw three innings last night.
Yeah.
So he's back at it. But they're playing Jibs at short, Craddock at second. They got a freshman
Raiden Richardson.
Yeah, I like him. I like
his brother plays on my 10-year-old team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's going to be special. For sure. And then their center fielder's having a really good year.
You're not that 10-year freak guy out
there. Oh, yeah.
You're like, your pants, like, you know.
Yeah, he's in a jumpsuit.
Charting 10-year pitches and stuff like
that. Pitches. We're doing a change-up. I don't have a chart. it's fun. I like it. You know, I work with high school kids. I work with 10-year-olds. It's fun.
I'll tell you, it's exciting.
Yeah.
The most enjoyable times I ever had coaching was when I had Gus Wathen, Dusty's kid.
Yeah, sure.
Tolentino's kid, right? And we won one game all spring long.
And who was there for that one game?
But you know the beauty of that?
Yeah.
Is that you always get run ruled. So you're going home early. It's not like you're hanging
You get
out
the 9 day. And the 11 game. Man, you're home by lunch.
Always get out of here. It's like, great. But cool. I had more fun because kids were learning. And it was a good time.
I helped you out in Pigeon Forge. That's where we got the win.
That was phenomenal. Yeah. And you know what? And then we'll jump on to Randy. But we, you know, Craddock. You know, is young for his class.
Yeah,
he's young for his class. So we go to Pigeon Forge and we're playing on a 12U mound. Was it a 12U mound?
Yeah, it's 12U.
And here comes this team that, you know, flew guys in from all over.
They only lost one game in a year.
They ran right through their bracket, and we wiggled our way through there, man. We had Cooper Gornett.
Yeah, Cooper.
Cooper was on that team. Was going to be very good.
Oh,
very good shortstop. He's going to be a
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then so we get to the championship round. And these guys are cocky, man. They got all the cool garb on. You know, we got CBC, you know, and half the hats don't match and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, you could just see, like, the coaches were perfect. Everybody had the same shorts on. Hey, this is 12U baseball.
Yeah.
Craddock got on the mound, and what did he punch out, 16?
It was ridiculous.
The other one was a jam shot,
like
the first. Or whatever. Threw a no-no on him.
That's awesome.
But, you know, they went to the plate. The first kid shook his head. Lefty came up, right?
Interested.
Bump, darts.
Business decision.
It was great.
Yeah, it was great.
Cool. We had that was a good time. And that's a great place to go.
We're going there Memorial Day weekend.
That's beautiful.
Well, I've been there, but I'm taking my team there Memorial Day.
Really, so much.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm excited. Yeah.
Yeah. Go down outside the complex, though. You're in the
Myrtle Beach. Yeah.
It's Myrtle Beach in the mountains. Oh, yeah.
When you're staying in a place that has the name, you know, hotel, and part of the name is Circus, like, bad. This is not going to be good, man. Cool. This is not going to be good. All right. You want to bring Randy?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Very special guest coming on today. Obviously, we talked a little bit about Coach Hood earlier, but this North Carolina native. Played at Campbell University, had a very successful career in professional baseball, which we'll get to summer of 94. Definitely want to ask him about that. But came back, started his coaching career at Campbell, his alma mater, moved on to UNC Wilmington, has been the head coach there now for...
Since 19, I believe.
This is his fifth year.
COVID, got banged with a COVID.
Right, Coach Randy Hood.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Yeah,
doing all right.
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No, man, we appreciate it. So, why don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Coach. You know, we always ask this question to our college coaches, especially as kind of their journey leading up to where you are now. When did you know you wanted to be a head coach, specifically in college?
I would say, I kind of date it back a little bit back in pro ball. You know, once you kind of get playing, everybody wants to be in the big leagues. I kind of got a real quick taste of realizing I wasn't a prospect in about year one. I was able to kind of hang around for 5 years, but, you know, as I played in professional baseball, I knew that I would love to stay in the game. I honestly thought I would try to stay in professional baseball as far as development or managing or something like that. When I got released for the second time by the Angels, kind of was just kind of in a, you know, a, what am I going to do right now? Am I going to take another chance and maybe get picked up and continue to try to play and keep that dream going? Or do I start the next phase of my life, which I wanted it to be something in baseball. So nothing really from a professional standpoint, coaching wise, was available. I sent an email to Ray Tanner because I was living in Raleigh at the time, you know, sent some stuff out to some other people, and just so happened that, you know, Campbell had just let go one of their head coach, and Chip Smith, who used to be at Pfeiffer, got the head coaching job at Campbell, and I reached out to him. And luckily, I mean, and this is not normal how a lot of college coaches get into the college coaching rank, but he hired me as an assistant when he got the job. So I didn't have to do the volunteer route, didn't have to go all that. I was able to just jump into a Division I assistant job coming out of pro ball, and kind of honestly just started trying to figure out what being a college coach was all about at that time. There was a lot of young guys at that time that were around the Raleigh area, the Chad Holbrooks, the Roger Williams, Mike Kennedy was an assistant, Billy Best, who's a scout for a long time, was assistant at NC State. And I just kind of got into that pack and kind of learned the ropes a little bit through those guys, and, you know, spent 6 years at Campbell, and then has spent the last 20 plus at Wilmington. So it's been, and, you know, I never looked back. You know, professional baseball was there for me, but then, you know, once I got into college coaching, you know, it's just something that it's just a great level to be in. And I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's been something that's been really special.
It's interesting because, I mean, so you had 6 and then you did 17 as an assistant, right? Before you got the head coaching job, something like that. So
18. Yeah.
18. So wow. 24 years as an assistant. When did you realize you were poor?
For the first 20 plus of those years.
Isn't it amazing how baseball guys find wives? Like, listen, I'm not going to make any money, and this game is my mistress. So, you know, you want to go for the ride?
Yeah.
Yeah. I met a young lady at Campbell, and she was very smart. She ended up graduating with a biology degree in 3 years, ended up going to Bowman Gray Medical School at Wake Forest to get her PA. And she became a physician assistant, and, you know, having a wife that has a real solid job like that in the early ages of whether you're playing in the minor leagues or being a college assistant helps out a lot. So I'm forever grateful for my wife, Patricia.
So, you know, they say, he says they're really smart. They're smart.
Yeah.
They're really smart if they didn't marry a baseball guy.
Right.
Well, luckily my wife met me when I wasn't a baseball guy, so she's extremely smart. Yeah. So, but yeah.
Same with Amanda after a while, but you know, I showed Amanda videos when I was playing. We're sitting on the bed, she's looking up at the camera. She looks back down at me, she's looking up at the camera, she's like, "Where's that guy?" wasn't there, but yeah. So all those years, obviously you spent 18 years at Wilmington as an assistant under Coach Scaff.
Yeah.
Great guy. I love talking to him. It's old school baseball. Every time I run into him up there. And if I was anywhere, I just want to go find a baseball field, whether it's, you know, down at Wilmington, or, you know, I just want to be there and watch. And then when, you know, somebody like Coach Scaff comes, that's kind of legendary and, you know, and has been around the game as long as I have, the conversations are fun. And he coached Carl Willis.
Yeah.
And Carl Willis, pitching coach for years and years now in the big leagues with Cleveland. And he, you know, he's a teammate of mine or whatever. So, you know, we have conversation. I hear stories about Carl before I knew Carl. We used to call him Duck Butter. You know, Carl was on Duck Butter was heading on his way out, basically. And he figured out that if he put something on, because he had these rolls underneath his neck, if he put something underneath his roll, where you go like this and the ball would do something. Next thing you know, he's back in the big leagues pitching. You know? And there's a big league. So Carl Duck Butter Willis. So, yeah. Great. So, he's a funny human, isn't he?
Yeah, he's awesome. And, you know, I've been able to really, you know, I wouldn't say we have like a really close relationship the way maybe you or him or coach and him have, but like throughout the years, he's been a great ambassador for our program, a great supporter from a distance. And just this past week with us after Tuesday's game last week in Durham, we flew up to Boston on Thursday and were able to catch the Red Sox-Cleveland game for about five innings in the rain. But Carl's the pitching coach at Cleveland. So, you know, I was texting back and forth trying to figure out how we could kind of like at least say hello and everything, because as soon as the game was over, they're getting on a plane and flying out. But it was neat that those guys, you know, played Thursday when we were up in Boston, so was able to take the team to Fenway and see Red Sox and Cleveland play.
Yeah, he's awesome. He told two of the funniest, both of them were dirty jokes, but two of the funniest dirty jokes I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, no.
Was like I did 800 sit-ups that day. And he had that Yanceyville, North Carolina drawl
right,
with it too.
So right.
Made it even better. So, Randy, in all those years with, you know, with Coach Scaff, obviously, I always tell people it's like, you know, you're panning for gold, right? Mm-hmm. You scoop stuff up and you shake it and you find your own thing, but you take nuggets along the way. What nuggets did you get from Coach Scaff?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the main ones for me, Jeff, is just you mentioned old school, but if you want to be a great baseball coach, a great baseball player, be a good team, you got to really be solid in the fundamentals. And Coach Scaff was huge about just really, you know, you got to be fundamentally sound in everything we do. So I think that's something that, you know, obviously I've always believed in that, but you know, when you hear it for 18 years and you see the man really preach it, it's something that I think is extremely important and something that I really believe in. Like, you got to be fundamentally sound in a lot of the phases of baseball. So that plus just being what I would call a grinder, you know, at our level, I haven't been in the Power Five level. I feel like we're a power major, major, but you know, there's a difference in the money and the scholarships and the facilities. And, you know, where I've been at Campbell and UNC Wilmington, great programs, but, you're still fighting an uphill battle in a lot of things. So instead of kind of complaining about it, I think you just put your nose down and you work and you grind and you figure out a way to win. And you figure out a way to be successful. You figure out a way to make it a great experience for the players that you bring into your program. So that is something I've taken, because Coach has always been a guy to just, you know, put your nose down and go to work, not worrying about what's all being thrown at you, all the curveballs coming, whether it's lack of resources or whatever it might be. And then I would say the third thing, if I just had to pinpoint, is just the thought of just, you know, making sure that each player that you bring in to the best of our ability, because it's not always going to happen. You can't make 40 players happy, but try to make it the best experience they can possibly have for whatever their opportunities that they get, and to care about them, because there's a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of things that go along throughout a young kid's career. And, you know, we're his next set of parents. We're the guy kind of looking over him a little bit. So, you know, just you know, whatever the word is of just making sure that you do your best to kind of take care of the kids the best we can from a coaching standpoint. I think those are, you know, some of the things that I've taken away from Coach Scaff.
You talk about relationships, Coach. you know, that's such an important part of coaching, obviously, and being a player, players having relationships, coach to player relationship. How during the recruiting process, is it really important for you to kind of get that player on campus, you know, not recruiting from a remote, you know, area or distance, you know, getting them on campus, meeting them face to face, mom and dad player. Is that still very important to you?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I think it's, you know, one thing that I've asked our assistants and I've always believed in is, you know, if we're going to make a kid an offer, you know, I'd like to get him on campus and stand next to him and be next to him and his parents and, you know, walk around with them and talk some and just kind of get a feel of how they react and act to you, your staff. And, you know, just, I think it's that baseball instinct of just kind of getting a feel for them, and knowing them and their families. Can't do it all the time in this age of recruiting, because things work fast a lot. But I think it's important that you do get them on campus and you sit down with them. You spend some time. Usually guys that we have a lot of interest in and guys that we're going to probably eventually consider making an offer, we're going to get them on campus and spend a couple hours on a visit with them and just make sure that, you know, we don't see any red flags or anything like that, because that's, to me, you got to have people that, one, that you're going to be comfortable being around with for, you know, 3, 4, sometimes 5 years. The way it is now, maybe it's less than that. Just depends on what happens. But, you know, I think you got to understand them, their families, and just get a good feel for the player himself.
That's a good point, because, you know, there's programs out there that just the facilities and the uniform and what conference and everything, and it sells itself.
Right.
So they really don't even have to, because you hear people all the time, like, well, we offered them, you know, we saw them here, we offered them there. But the family hadn't even been to campus or met the head coach, let alone it could be the recruiting coordinator down at PG or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, and they do that. So that was a big part for us, you know, is going and seeing, you know, where, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you going to be? But you know, but now, you know, things have gotten better in a sense, like, you know, facilities are just as important, mm-hmm. you know, sure. to the recruiting process. So to get them on campus and see what you guys have and what you're going to do. You know, the indoor facility is beautiful. I don't know right. if you've ever been in there, Todd, or
no.
seen it.
Yeah,
Andrew, maybe we can we'll go by it. When we go play golf.
Yeah.
And see that. If Randy will let us in, will you let us in?
I think you have a key.
I got kicked out of there, you know. Yeah. Great. Gray's my buddy now, though. But he's like, dude, you can't watch games up here. I'm like, well, Randy said I could. That didn't go over so well, so I don't think he likes you either.
I'll talk with Gray, but yeah, you should have your free seat up there, no problem. Yeah.
But it is beautiful. I believe it. I mean, I've been in sure. some nice ones. Top 5 in the country.
That's awesome. Yeah,
it really cool. is, and. You know, you can get a lot of work done in there. You definitely can. And then, so now the plan, we were talking to Randy prior to getting on the show, the plan for the fields. Why don't you fill everybody in on that? Because it is a big piece. I mean, bringing somebody there to see, look, this is where because as a baseball player or any athlete, you're going to spend more time there.
That's right.
And in your dorm room and in the dining hall and in the weight room than anywhere else on campus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Wilmington's – sells itself a lot of times. Before I jump into the facility part, that was one of the things back when me and my wife were discussing about, you know, do we leave certain places or do we, you know, what do we want to do? And we always said, man, how awesome would it be to be able to work and live in either like a Wilmington or a Charleston? So when I was at Campbell and obviously Bowie's Creek, went to school there, worked there, you know, Wilmington and Charleston were some nice destinations out of Boys Creek, but, you know, just, you know, got the opportunity, like I said, 20 some years ago to come here, and it's been a great, and, but just from a facility standpoint, like Jeff was mentioned, you know, Brooks Field, which is our stadium, was built back in the 70s, the late Bill Brooks, who's named after, he basically was the matriarch or the whole starter, the guy that basically created UNC Wilmington Athletics, first athletic director. I think he coached basketball, coached baseball at the same time. But the field's named after him. But the stadium and everything was built in the 70s. And over the years, we've had some minor, you know, additions and things like that, but we've never really had any kind of major work. But 5 years ago, like Jeff mentioned, we were fortunate enough to have a unbelievable donor step up, and we were able to build, and like Jeff mentioned, I think one of the top 5 to 10 indoor facilities in the country. It's SEC type material. It gives us a great player development area from a hitting standpoint, from a pitching standpoint. Last year, we put about $100,000 worth of weights in there. So now, from a weight training standpoint, our players can basically walk right off the field up into the weight room and get their workouts done. And what it has ended up saving us is probably 2 to 3 hours a day of not having to wait for a wait time period up in the main weight room. And that's huge for our players. It's huge for open up some space for some other sports that can now take some of those times up in the main weight room. But yeah, we've great indoor facility, a nice practice turf field behind it or right beside of it. And what we've got going on this summer, as soon as the conference tournament hosting we're over, and if we're not hosting a regional, which right now I don't think we're in position. Our plans are to go in and basically redo the whole playing field. We're going to totally take everything out, bring in and put in an artificial surface, which will be new for us because I've always been a natural surface guy. But the way everything is happening now, I think there's a lot of positives with artificial surface. We're going to build new dugouts. We're going to put up a new outfield fence to kind of tie in with our berm, have a little different look, hopefully squeeze in new lighting and somehow maybe a video board because we're due to have a new video scoreboard, especially with the type of program we have. But that would be like phase one. And then hopefully over the next 3 to 5 years, add a phase two as phase three to it, which would be basically upgrading the stadium seating and the fan amenities, and then also bringing all of our player operations and coaching operations, which is our offices and locker rooms, over to this side of the street, which would be connected to the baseball facility, probably somewhere in the back of right field and tied into right field, our indoor facility, and our turf field. So a lot of things in the hopper. Obviously, it takes a lot of money. We're kind of working on that as well. But this first phase is going to really take care of just, you know, what we're playing on and a huge upgrade to what Brooks Field is now. So it's exciting and looking forward to having a new field, new dugouts and things like that for the spring of 2025.
Chafe, that was really nice.
Yeah, it's a great that contribution.
Donated all that money to
Amanda. Don't listen to him.
Schaefer Field at Brooks Stadium. You guys.
So what are the requirements though for you guys to host a regional? Is a Jumbotron one of them? You know, a video scoreboard, is that one?
I mean, that's one. You have to have a specific standard of lighting to meet ESPN standards. You've got to have enough space in the press box and surrounding areas to handle your TV crews, both teams, radio, and all the media credentials that come with hosting a regional or super regional. Those are the main things. Like stadium size, I think we're fine, but we just need to upgrade. You know, we've for the last 20 plus years have been, I think Aaron Fitt mentioned, probably the best team that has not won a regional. We've been in the regionals 11 out of the last 20 years. And, you know, we've been knocking on the door, but we just haven't kind of knocked through and won a regional and got to that super regional round. So, you know, I think our program deserves those type additions. And we've just got to continue to push and find some people, whether it's in our area or around the state or alums or whatever to help us with it, because, you know, I think our program has done as about as good as you can with what I would say at times, not a whole lot.
Yeah. So it's interesting because that kind of plays into my next question is that, you know, the Power Fives, right? They find these kind of the shiny penny kids out there, right?
Right.
The kids that already, you know, the high ranked or rated or what, you know, I'm not a fan of the rankings, but, you know, rated kids that, and they find their way into that. And then the, you know, the recruiting process for, what'd you call it? Major mids? Is that what was the term?
Well, they call mid majors, but I think, and I consider us a power major.
A power major. Okay. Yeah. A power major. But so, you know, we've had this conversation about somebody that we know that was a recruiting coordinator at a ACC school,
right,
and took a head coaching job somewhere else. And the recruiting process was a lot easier because of the school and where they were at. Mm-hmm. Then you get here and you find out it doesn't work that easy. Right. So, you know, you have to rely on your recruiting coordinator to go out because you can't go out. You know, you have to stay and manage the club and basically manage the business of being a head baseball coach. But so talk a little bit about the staff, Chris Moore, and what is, you know, his, I know he's coaching third and, mm-hmm. you know, he's on the field to do certain things with the kids, but his primary is to go out and find this kind of, it's a nice penny, but it just needs to be kind of polished up a little bit, like a Tanner Thatch or a Kroom or somebody along those guys.
Yeah, you know, I've got a great staff, and the good thing about it is every one of them outside of Tabor, which I'll talk about him in a minute, but our four full-time guys, they've all been with us over 5 years. You know, Chris is in his eighth season. Kelly Sechrist, our pitching coach, is in his sixth season. Plus, he also played here. And then Josh Stott, who I moved into our third assistant role out of the operations role, he's in his 11th year. And he started as a graduate student assistant and has worked his way up. But he attended school here. But just to me, it's important to have a lot of guys are on your staff that, one, you trust, one that is loyal. To not only our program, but to our players and people that that I believe in, understand how I work, because, you know, I think that's important. You know, I like to get everybody's insight. I listen to them. I obviously have to make the decisions and it falls on me. But I do like give all of my assistants, you know, a lot of leeway on telling me what they think, because I think that's important to listen to them. Let them coach, let them grow, let them make mistakes. And when they do, let them know about it. because we all make mistakes, and I want to be held accountable, you know, by the higher ups, because my expectations are high, not only for myself, but for our program always. And if you don't want to be held accountable, then I don't know if you can ever reach the top, because you're going to fail a lot to try to reach the top. And Chris Moore is our recruiting coordinator, and you know, Chris has had a great he's from the Wilmington area, played at New Hanover High School with some of the top high school teams when he grew up, Trot Nixon, Fletcher Bates, a lot of guys. So that they were loaded. But Chris played in the minor leagues for multiple years, and then got into college coaching, and he coached at Georgia Southern, at Appalachian State, at Lander, a couple other spots. But very well experienced, very good offensive mind, like I said, just you know, a big part of our staff. Our pitching coach, Kelly Sechrist, I recruited him. He played here, got drafted by the New York Mets in the 10th round, made it up to AAA. Once he got out of pro ball, he came back to be our volunteer and has worked his way into a pitching coach position for us. So and knowing Kelly for a long time, you know, I know what I'm getting out of there. Josh Stott, like I said, has worked his way all the way from being a graduate student assistant when he got here, to being a volunteer assistant, to being our ops person. And then I moved him into the third coaching role here this past year when the NCAA allowed the baseball programs to add a third assistant. And then my other position that we have is Tabor Mongero, which Tabor, his father and me played against each other back in the days when I was at Campbell, he was at Wilmington. He was the CA player of the year, Trent Mongero, and shout out to him. I think he just saw where he got his 500th coach yesterday. So props to Trent. Another great grinder, baseball guy. Jeff mentioned Coach Scaff. I feel like Trent's just right in that mold too. But his son, Tabor, it's kind of crazy how his path worked his way back to us. He committed and played at Gardner-Webb for, I think, 1, maybe 2 years, redshirted there, then went to junior college in Florida and just worked out, 4 or 5 years ago to where we were able to bring him in from Central Florida as a player. He played 3 years here. It's probably one of the best shortstops I've ever been around. Just Mr. Automatic. When you hit it, when it got hit to him, you're out. And he ended up being a really daggone good hitter too. Understood what type of hitter he was, and just a great, great team player. And I knew at some point that if there was ever a position where we could get him involved, and I knew he wanted to be in baseball, and he started off, in high school, in a short career from a coaching standpoint, going to help his dad here at Wilmington Christian. But our position opened up, and he's our player development guy, and he's going to be a hell of a baseball coach as he continues his path. But just having a lot of, like I said, former players, but also people that I believe in and people that I trust and people that understand me and what we're trying to do here. Has always been important.
One of the greatest accolades a coach can have is when you're in the game long enough, your tree,
right?
Mm-hmm. And who stays involved. So when we do our nonprofit, we have a it's called the Home Plate Gala, Randy, and it's we do it every year. It's kind of a black tie affair, and we raise money, to keep kids in the game, to help families, yep, in whatever scenario that we can. But everybody that we honor, they get either Spirit of the Game or Lifetime Spirit of the Game or Guardian of the Game. So we've had Grady Little, we've had Mike Schilt, we've had Jack Leggett. This year we're going to honor Gary Gilmore. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much, they take their celebrity, but they use that celebrity for the better of others.
Yeah.
So it's a big piece. So when you start talking about your tree,
right?
You know, mm-hmm, you're hoping that, that's what's trickling down. Like, you're doing more because, again, this isn't an easy game. There's only so many college Division I coaching jobs out there, right? But everybody wants to aspire to something like that. But, for somebody like Chris to stay in the game as long as he has and Kelly to remain in the game as long as he has, do you look in the dugout every year and maybe – it's not consciously, but maybe subconsciously look at somebody and go, and I do it here – it's like, that guy's going to stay in the game. That guy's going to coach. That guy's going to be, and you can see it along the way that, they're going to be
A
key piece.
Yeah, you can see it in certain players. And you just sometimes, not because they're great players, but they understand the game. They understand what it takes day in and day out to be good at this game. And not always your best players are your best coaches when that's it's right. All said and done. And you don't have to be – I mean, you used to be in the big leagues. You had to play in the big leagues to be a big league manager. You're not seeing that anymore. But from a college standpoint, I think you can tell as a coach when you're paying attention, the guys that you feel like's got a chance down the road to stay in the game. And, I hope I'd love to have young guys continue to stay in because I think it's fresh ideas. And, obviously I need some more guys to throw batting practice and hit fungos. But you're talking about the coaching tree and stuff like that. And I know this is probably on the subject, but I thought I've been meaning to kind of share this with people because it's amazing to me, a program like ours, just over the 24 years that I've been involved as an assistant and a head coach, and maybe a couple years just prior, but these are some names that have been coaches at UNC Wilmington that are still in college baseball. And I'm going to run through a couple kind of throw it. Head coach at Gaston Community College, Sean Doty, was a pitching coach here. I took his job. When I got the job here, he had left to go be the Old Dominion pitching coach and coach Justin Verlander. but Sean Doty, Cliff Godwin was a volunteer here my second year, and look at the path he's taken now. Jason Howell, who's assistant coach at North Carolina, was a pitching coach here with us. Scott Jackson was one of the first guys I asked Coach Scaff to, like, we need to hire this guy because he's a Campbell guy, and I know he's a great baseball guy. He had never been a pitching coach, but we brought him on to be a pitching coach here, and he's worked his way. Just, you see his career now. He's the Liberty head coach. Seth Maness, just a couple years ago, was on our staff, and now he's the pitching coach at UNC Greensboro, former big leaguer. This was pre-me, but head coach at Middle Tennessee State, Jerry Myers, was a pitching coach at UNC Wilmington. He's the head coach at Middle Tennessee State now. Used to be at South Carolina. Chad Oxendine, who's the head coach at
Longwood.
Was on our staff. Matt Williams, who's the pitching coach right now at South Carolina, was a pitching coach for us. Robert Woodard, who's the head coach at Charlotte, was a pitching coach for us. Zach Booker, I think, works with Guilford College, played for us. But just a lot of guys that are still in baseball. And then we've got, you know, Carl Willis in the big leagues. Rob Flippo, who was a coach here for us, is in the big leagues with the Marlins. Matt Myers, who was a pitching coach for us a couple years ago and then went to Lipscomb, is now the pitching coach at Greensboro for the Pirates, the Greensboro team. And we've got Josh Bonifay, who's one of the top player development guys for the Rangers right now. And then we got three or four people that are currently in the scouting profession, which are doing an unbelievable job for us. Jake Koenig, Clinton Sewell, and one of the female scouts around the country, Malin Deese. So there's only a couple female scouts that are out there, and she worked for us here and went to school here. But just, you know, you talk about coaching trees and things like that, but, you know, that's pretty cool for a program like ours to have a lot of those type people. And I think it speaks to not only, you know, what our program's all about, but, you know, we've done a great job of not only developing players, but also people to help coach and build college baseball.
So you're fortunate now because you have kept your staff around for a while because it's a stepping stone. Everybody realizes that, right? You bring an assistant in or a volley in because they got bigger dreams. It's like, you know, nobody played this game just to be average or whatever. And you got to find that right situation, the place to live. Like, what's the name of that place in Campbell?
Buies Creek.
Buies Creek, right?
Yeah.
You know what Hare told us? No distractions.
Yeah, he sits at his desk. He could see his kid's school. He could see where he eats every day. He could see from his desk in his office. So it's obviously.
And he tells his players, you know, there's no distraction in development here. There's nothing you can do other than go to the field. Yeah, pretty interesting stuff. So I want to talk about a couple players or a few players, right? I enjoy it, man. I'm loving watching because they're a blue collar type of group. They're grinders, you know. But they're good players, right? They are. But he's got a couple of really special guys that I enjoy watching. One's a sophomore, Tanner Thatch. And I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I looked like a genius that day, didn't I, Randy? When you guys went to Wake, and I said Thatch and Kurtz threw the best. Both hit a massive tank, and they both got hits. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm really good at this, man. I was really good at this. I was afraid to push that button, but I did. But there's a special talent to watch. I mean, and not only just watching him offensively, like this kid is good defensively.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Play left-handed shortstop if you hit the ball right at
him. Yeah, he – wow. I mean, he's had an unbelievable first year and a half, unbelievable freshman year, freshman All-American, hit 15 home runs. I think he had 68 ribbies as a freshman, like a .282 batting average. And, you know, just like Jeff mentioned, the defense last year and this year, like he makes our infielders, one, feel comfortable because they know they can throw the ball. And if it's not just perfect, he's probably going to catch it and clean things up for you real quickly. But he saved us a lot there. But just his footwork and his ability around the bag to be a 6'4", 240-pound guy, like Jeff mentioned, he might could play shortstop. It just he might not have the range, but I tell you what, he'll catch everything. But the offensive part this year has been really special. I think he's fourth overall in the country in home runs right now at 21. You know, he's hitting over 300. He's done a better job of cutting down on his strikeouts, even though I'd like to see that get better, because I think his next level of hitting is just understanding and having a little more plate discipline. But I think you got to be really careful as a coach not to take aggressiveness away from hitters. You got to, you know, I'd rather tone them down than have to beg them to speed it up. And Tanner likes to swing the bat, and so, like, I think his ability to see pitches and be able to lay off of things at times will get better as he gets older. But you know, he's having a heck of a year. He's tied our single season home run record at 21, and I think there's five guys that hold it. So whenever he hits that next one, hopefully soon, that he'll break the record, and then, you know, it'll be his, and, you know, he'll keep adding to it. And what's crazy is I don't think he's very far off from the career record, and he's just a sophomore.
Wow.
Pretty special watch. You know, what's interesting is that the wind can blow in any direction there.
Yeah. Right?
And so he could have more if it just say it was a still environment or whatever, but he's I've watched him turn the wind around a few times, and you know, but yeah, you're right. He doesn't like to take his walks. He wants to swing the bat. He's, you know, when you become a power hitter, at some point you gotta go, I'm going to have to suck this up and take my walk. But I like his aggressiveness too.
That's right.
And you know, part of the reason I'm asking this, and I'll get to that, is just their roles, because he's one of the younger stars. Then you have Brian Orr. We had him with the NCIS, Jason, USA Baseball. Just with Zelly being hurt, you know, he's taking on a pretty big load every single day.
Yeah, and no
every single day, out.
Yeah, no doubt. We at the beginning of last fall, we lost a catcher that was on our team. Decided to pack it in, and you know, never really know that's happening at certain times. So it left us a catcher short. So basically, you know, we asked a couple position players, you know, had they ever had any catching experience. And, you know, basically a young freshman, Jason Mack, learned how to catch for us in the fall and has done a really good job. And Brian Arndt, which Jeff mentioned, had a hamate issue in the fall, so he didn't play much in the fall. So we were really, you know, limited with our catchers. And then as the springs progressed, you know, Zelly had some injuries, then caught mono and was out a month. So basically Brian Arndt, our number one catcher, has he's caught about every day. He's done a heck of a job. He's built to be able to do that, but just his ability to show up every day and handle things, and also, you know, he's had a solid year offensively. I think obviously he can be a little better, but he works hard, and hopefully he'll continue to, you know, improve in those areas. But just you know, we got Zelly back last week, so hopefully we'll be able to get him back in the mix, because there was a period there during that 2-week stretch when we were playing at Charlotte, I think Zelly hit like 4 home runs in about 5 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, losing him for a month was, at that time, was, you know, really hurt us, because I thought he had a chance to start getting a lot of DH at bats and kind of helping out behind the plate with Brian. But you know, you mentioned Tanner, you mentioned Brian, but just quality kids, man. And you say baseball, but they're also very, very grounded in their faith. They're very, very mature. They're guys that kind of understand that there's other things other than baseball. When we come across that street, they're all baseball, but off the field, you know, they have things that they like to do and understand, and a lot of it's built around their faith.
So old school That's guy awesome. Out there for me, who I is one of my favorite players on the team out there, is Jack Kroom.
Yeah.
This, you're talking about a blue collar grinder, man. This kid gets here, and he has played phenomenal third base. Yeah. And he struggled a little bit early on. Wasn't really, you know, I mean, he's had good numbers all the way through. And then all of a sudden he just finds barrels all the time. And he's been fun to watch. And he's another one right now. He's almost got that Tabor effect where, you know, you hit something that way.
Right.
He's gobbled it and he's getting it across the diamond. But you have these three guys, and Jack is a super senior, and Brian's a junior, and Tanner's a sophomore. They're dynamic in the dugout with all the other guys. I mean, that's a big piece because, like you said, you can't make every player happy. You know, when you got 40 guys, it's difficult. Right. You know, because you're winning, you're right in your nine, and you're going. But you know, how big of a piece are those guys to?
Yeah, they're huge. You know, we have five captains, and those three are three of our five captains. Those were the three position players that the team selected, Jack Kroom, Brian Arndt, Tanner Thatch, and then our two pitchers that are captains are Ryan Calvert and Luke Craig. And Luke Craig's just the go-to guy, the bullpen man. He's been a stud. But, you know, Jack Kroom has, like you mentioned, has just since he's got on campus, being a local guy from New Hanover High School, he's just earned his way, and he's just got better every year. And, you know, I think he's a guy, in my opinion, that, you know, I wouldn't say he's, you know, one of your high prospects, but I do think he's good enough that maybe someone should have gave him an opportunity to play at the next level. And, you know, I think it was a little disappointing to him last year to not have that opportunity. I don't think there was any hesitation of coming back for an extra year and go to grad school and get a business analytics major and his grad degree. But just like you mentioned, Jeff, he got off to a slow start. But when you've got an older guy that you've known that can do it and has done it at this level, you've got to just trust them and let them keep going out there and know that they're going to turn things around. One thing that never swayed was his defense, like you said. Even though when he was struggling the first month offensively, the guy's just been unbelievable at third base for us over the last 3 years. But, you know, he's got it going hitting-wise, and, you know, he's just fun. I mean, he's a character, not a real loud person, but he is talkative. And he keeps everybody light. And, you know, just having a mix of him and Tanner and Brian and several other players, you know, it's a real good dugout. And, you know, it's fun guys to be around because a lot of them I get to hang around with them being a coach. I like being in the dugout just so you have a feel of your players. So I'm there with them and listening to them. And sometimes they're saying things that I just say, man, y'all need to get focused a little bit better or shut up or, you know, keep it going or, you know, sometimes.
You really say it that nice, Randy.
but we got, you know, you just got to be careful about how you go about, you know, being a little bit, you know, over the top. You know, I'm a high energy guy. I like to have, you know, fun, but also you got to respect your opponent and respect the game. So there's just times where, you know, you really want to just kind of let it go, but you think there's times you got to kind of hold it back as well.
So before the season, Coach, obviously you guys are having a great year, and you set expectations, right? As a, you know, I played at Winthrop in the early 2000s in 2001. We won 48 games. You know, our expectation was Omaha, right? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, looking at what Coastal has done and, you know, Fresno State 1 year winning the whole thing, you know, that's a real, you know, that's what you should be looking at, right? Is that the mindset for your boys right now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, those programs that you mentioned, the Fresno States, the Coastals, you know, the Kent States, the Stony Brook made it to the World Series
within
the last 10 years. You know, there's mid-major programs that have, and you got to have some luck, but, you know, you have the ability if, you know, guys don't leave for whatever reasons to develop and put some good teams together. But yeah, I mean, Coastal kind of showed everybody that if you invest in your baseball program and you have the coaching staff there that believes in what they're doing, you can do anything. And that run they went on in 2015, I'll never forget it. But you know, it was 1 year. I mean, I think they could win, you know, different times. They've had different really good programs, different teams, but, you know, just what, you know, they've done, they've shown a lot of people at our level that if you invest in the program and you recruit well and you develop well, I mean, you can play with anybody. You know, baseball is a sport where even though there is some money discrepancies and scholarship discrepancies and facility discrepancies at the higher levels, you can still day in and day out compete with a lot of teams if you carry yourself the right way, if you do things the right way, and you have good players.
Baseball gods are evil, though, aren't they?
They're terrible. Yeah.
That's right. Yes. I mean, you guys go, you knock off Wake, you knock off NC State, you have a big, you're up in Northeast, you have a big weekend, and then walk in and, you know, here's Charleston Southern.
Yeah.
You know, this is an incredibly humbling sport. It will slap you down in a heartbeat, but.
Well, that midweek game is always a fishy game, right?
The interesting part, I mean,
works both ways. Yeah.
Their schedule is really good midweek.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But there are the trap games in there, right? Where if you play down, the teams, like Randy said, there's teams out there that are in the mid-major thing that maybe they're not overall. If you played 10 games, you're probably going to win 8 of them.
Right.
But they catch you on that one game, and
that's right.
And it gets you.
And there's like, you know, everybody can win. I mean, everybody's got a pitcher or a hitter or somebody that can, if they're on that day, they can keep you in a ball game. And just like Jeff mentioned yesterday, you know, the wind wasn't favorable for hitting yesterday. I think I had us marked down 12 hard hit balls, and like 10 of them were over 100 miles an hour off the bat. And we didn't get anything for
two balls that Newton hit and Tanner hit in the last inning with two balls right there. Right.
But you know, give them credit. Their left fielder made 4 or 5 unbelievable plays.
Oh, wow.
He ran down some balls, and but it's just, that's how baseball is. It will humble you. It will give you the best highs, but it will also slap you in the face, and then you're just like. Like Jeff mentioned, we were on such a good roll. You got to figure, like, man, we're going to keep it rolling. And then you get knocked down. Well, you got to learn from it and get yourself back up on the saddle, because we've got a good William & Mary team that we're playing this weekend on the road. And we got to maintain what we're doing in our league as well.
Yeah. Two very good arms on that William & Mary team that I've seen throw. Yeah, very good. Yeah. Coach, I think we'd be remiss if we don't ask you about the summer of 94. Which is really funny. I have an old friend on that team, Mike Bertotti.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So I've heard some stories about that playing with MJ. You know, obviously that's what an experience that must have been, just playing with him, but obviously going to every park and it's sold out and everyone coming to see Randy Hood. You must have been pretty pumped for that.
Yeah, they were all flocking to see 5'11" outfielder. It was crazy this past weekend. Every time we go to Boston, one of my former teammates, Glenn DeSarcina, who played shortstop for us, his brother Gary DeSarcina played in the big leagues for a long time. But he lives up on the Cape, and he'll come over and hang out for a couple games. So I got to saw him up in Boston. He was another one of those. You hit it to him at shortstop, and it's he's out, a good left-handed hitter. But no, that summer, you know, when I realized and found out that one, I was going to be back in Double-A, because in 93, I'd finished up the season, the last half in 93 with the Barons. And Terry Francona was our manager, and he was our manager in 94 as well. But so I was going back in 94 to be there the whole year. And then about a week before, and there was a lot of chatter out of spring training because Michael was in the big league camp the whole year up until the last couple weeks. And everyone was wondering where he was going to be assigned. And then when they said Birmingham, we were like, oh, heck, it's going to be crazy. That whole summer, just the like you mentioned, I think we outdrew home and away attendance 3 of the major league teams that year.
It's crazy.
Every night, you know, the stadiums were jam-packed, and they try to add different seating. Like, there was one one time, I think in Huntsville, Alabama, where they actually roped off foul territory and allowed people on the field just to get another 400 people on there. And so you're playing with actually people on the field. So like you wouldn't ever see that now in minor league baseball, but like then they were just doing everything they can to get people in the stadium. But, you know, coming in on the hotels at 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning on the Southern League trips, and you see 400 or 500 people at the hotel. Like, I wasn't used to that. Now, you're talking about the greatest athlete at that time in the world who had just come off of 3 NBA titles is playing minor league baseball, and I'm riding a bus and hanging out in the locker room and on the field with them. And all that kind of stuff. It was unbelievable. Got a lot of stories. I could write a book. But, you know, I think it's part of the baseball thing where a lot of things just stay, you know, to that group. And, you know, there's stories we can share, but then there's a lot of things that you just kind of keep to yourself and just kind of giggle and laugh and go like, holy crap, I was involved with that. But it was neat, you know, just – I was always a Michael Jordan fan growing up in North Carolina. We played in the same high school conference, even though he was older than me, but he played at Laney. I played at Southern Wayne. So I remember him coming to Southern Wayne and the gym being packed when he's like, you know, the top basketball player in the state, and followed his career. I remember when I was at Campbell, you know, at that time back in the 80s, WGN and the Bulls were the thing. Every night when they played at 7:30, you know, I made sure I had the TV on and I was waiting for the starting lineups to be called and kind of echo them out. You know, Bill Cartwright and Luke Longley, and you know, that was just, you know, that was our thing. And then all of a sudden, I'm, you know, playing with him, wow, playing baseball. It's pretty neat, you know. To get to know the guy, even though, you know, he probably didn't let us in on everything, but to be around him and you know, just see how his work ethic and his ability to talk trash, his ability to do a lot of things that you could tell made him the athlete he was pretty special.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Good. Andrew, anything?
Good on mine. You guys took all the questions.
Awesome. Yeah, that was great. Appreciate
Randy,
it, Coach.
Man, we really appreciate you taking the time and jumping on here and giving us insight into the program and some of the players. It's been enjoyable to watch. And good luck this weekend with William and Mary. Come out of there with 3 and, you know, just take that trap game and throw it down the trap.
That's right. Yeah.
No, I appreciate it. And thanks for all you guys do for baseball. And, you know, it's a great game. And hopefully we all can continue doing what we can do to keep pushing it.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Randy. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks, Randy.
Take care. Good luck. All right.
It's great.
Yeah. See, so I'm so attached to the program that I can just, I mean, there's so much I want to know, but you can't.
Right.
You can't go down that road. I don't want to go down that road.
No.
I enjoy it at this level. I enjoy sitting, you know, I enjoy watching the practice. I like sitting up on the hill. I like watching certain players. It's just like watching a big league team. It's like your favorite team.
And the fact that, like, he's been there for 20 years, you know, Coach Moore's been there for 8 years.
Yeah.
Pitching coach has been there for 6 years. I mean, that's you don't see that. No. And
hang on to your crew that long.
That speaks very highly for him.
It does.
You know for sure.
For the area, for the facility, for the coach, you know, there's a lot of pieces there. But he's right. And you see it on every team that comes in there. Because I know almost all the coaches that come in there. Like yesterday, I saw Carl Kuhn, Matt Tyner. You know, I've seen Gary Gilmore, all these other guys, you know, it's the same thing comes out. We've heard it on here.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you got 40 guys.
Right.
You got 40 guys.
Yeah.
You're only writing 9, well, 10 really in the lineup. You're writing 10 in the lineup, but, you know, and then you got to manage through and you got to figure things out. And again, you know, you're dealing with freshmen, you're dealing with sophomores and juniors that might've played more as a freshman that are not playing much now. I mean, you see that on every single team. So it's, you know, you love the game. It's just sometimes it's difficult to you're just gonna have to suck it up, and it's like being a drill sergeant, right?
Sure,
you know,
for sure.
You know, when it's over, it's over, and you know, you go from there. Hopefully, it's a good thing.
Yep. No, and he's in a great spot. I mean, that's a desirable place to go. Yeah, I mean, like we talk to high school kids, JUCO kids all the time, and You know, they, you know, you talk about the schools in the Carolinas, like, well, what about Wilmington? Yeah. Like, I mean, if he, you get through a regional here and he gets it, I mean, that could be,
listen, I'm telling you, know, their facility, That's gonna match anybody in the country. So don't be afraid to.
No,
I, and I like the, you know, the, what they call it, the power major, the power, no,
power major
instead of a mid major, a power major. They're there, you know.
Oh yeah,
you know. I mean, listen, ECU is doing, you know, in Coastal. I mean, they're yeah, you know, they're in that all the time.
But Campbell,
they have creeped in there, yeah, and they're gonna keep going. But you know, I mean, when we see players, we call down there.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, we call everybody, but you know, for me, it's just like, okay, this be a nice fit down there.
That's right.
Yeah,
see what would happen.
Cool.
Yeah, that was good. That was different personalities.
Yeah,
different,
it was people, right? Yeah, it's
different personalities different. We're getting here.
It's
right?
It's funny. Last week we have someone like Chris on, who's just he's a great storyteller.
Oh, talk the week before
Miranda
that,
two like, in a row, and then yeah, you know, and this Randy's like to the point. You want to hear it. Like yeah, it's great. You yeah, know, it's it was a lot of fun.
And now we're on Bobby's thread for the OTZ, which
yeah,
is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
You're following it
every week,
watching it. That's pretty interesting stuff, man. I'm a fan of it.
Yeah, Bobby's going to do big things with that. That's an important. If you can figure out some type of an algorithm or a fact based system that is saying this is mm-hmm, who's number one, this is yeah, who's number 150.
Yeah,
that's pretty impressive.
Well, it's also a great, it really is. It's a good developmental tool in the sense of like, okay, this is what we have to beat.
Yes.
You know, this is what we have to go after to be successful and yep, to compete with all these other teams that are in the top spots. But
cool,
good show.
Yeah,
good
next show. Week. And next week we got my buddy on, Carl Nonnemaker, assistant head coach at now Auburn.
Was he at ODU?
He started at Monmouth, right? Then yeah, he went to ODU, and yeah, then Auburn. Yeah, so he's been at Auburn for a while. Very good one. Yeah, he was assistant coach of the year ABCA a couple of years ago when they went to Omaha. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah. And different perspective. First, I think it's our first recruiting coordinator we've had on probably in a while.
Well, yeah. Stampa doesn't recruit right now, does he? A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, little that's bit, right. Yeah. We had Stampa.
But
yeah,
in terms of just sure, yeah, full-time recruiting coordinator, what that job is, because yep, those guys leave the field. Like, they'll be games they're not there.
Yeah.
You know, they have to go recruit.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So.
All right, cool, everybody. Well, we got through
the. Yeah, thank you, of course, to our sponsors, Strathmore Capital Advisors, StrathmoreCapADV.com. Please visit our friends there. Architect Sports, as always, been a longtime partner.
They're going to assist in the
All-Star game.
In the All-Star game.
Great.
With us.
Great.
We're going to hold that. Advocacy Baseball, yep, and You Deserve a Chance Foundation out here at the
yep,
at the Stick, at the Tuxedo Dream Fields. And we're going to go committed.
Yeah, and uncommitted, right.
And then we're going to go committed 24, 25s, and then we're going to go uncommitted 25s, 26s. So the recruiters get to see the kids that are
yeah,
that are out there, and then also, you know, honor the kids that have, you know, that sure, have done well up to this point.
Yep. June 5th and 4th and 5th.
4th and 5th. Yep.
Cool.
All right, awesome, everybody. Well, thank you. And great, we'll try and do this again next week. We will do it again next week. I just don't know where I'll be. Might be on that deck getting a tan, baby.
Yeah.
All right. Peace out, everybody.
See you guys.